friends. As we know, as we all have experienced from time to time, people ask all sorts of questions about Buddhism, about the Dharma. They ask all sorts of questions about the Buddhist life. What is its nature? What are its characteristics? In what does it essentially consist? And if we consider these questions, if we try to answer these questions, then the most that we can say in a few words is that the Buddhist life, above all else, is a committed life. Now, what is it committed to? It's committed, first and foremost, to three things. Or rather, we should say, it's committed to three ideals. In the first place, there's the ideal of enlightenment, the ideal of a transcendental state, of wisdom which is one with compassion, compassion which is one with wisdom, a state of intuitive apprehension of what we can only describe as ultimate reality in its absolute depth and in all its manifestations. The Buddhist life is also committed to the ideal of the path to enlightenment. By path meaning the sum total of all those practices, all those procedures, all those methods, all those helps, all those exercises which conduce in one way or another to the realization of enlightenment. In other words, what we also call the process or the path of the higher evolution. And thirdly, the Buddhist life is committed to the ideal of what we call spiritual community, which we can also call spiritual fellowship, a fellowship which consists in following, in principle, in essence, the same path and aiming ultimately at the same goal. And in traditional Buddhist terms, these three great ideals, to the realization of which we're committed, are known as the ideal of the Buddha, the enlightened one, or if you like, of Buddhahood, the ideal of the Dharma, the path, the way, the truth, the teaching, and the ideal of the Sangha, the order, the spiritual community. Now, it isn't very difficult to commit oneself, or at least to think that one has committed oneself, even to believe that one has committed oneself, or even to commit oneself, actually, to some extent. But it's by no means easy to remain faithful to that commitment over a considerable period. There are so many difficulties, there are so many distractions, there are so many obstacles, there is so much of weakness and imperfection even within oneself, constantly getting in the way. So backsliding, recession from the original commitment, only too easily happens. So to safeguard against this, to help prevent this, if possible, constant reminders to ourselves and to others, to all of us, of our original basic commitment to these three ideals are absolutely necessary. Now, we can remind ourselves in various ways. We can perhaps pin up a slogan on our shaving mirror, or put it on our desk, or hang it up above the kitchen stove to remind us. Or we can read something every day. There are various ways in which we can remind ourselves of our original commitment. But one of the best known, most time-honored, and also most useful and effectual ways of reminding ourselves, and also a very popular and very enjoyable way, is with the help of, through the medium of, festivals and celebrations. So in the course of the Buddhist year, we find a number of festivals and celebrations which in one way and another, directly or indirectly, remind us of our great original commitment. And in the Buddhist year, there are three festivals in particular which stand out as the most important. And they all happen to fall on a day or a night of the full moon. First of all, we have the festival of the Buddha, the festival of the Enlightened One. And this, of course, reminds us of the ideal of enlightenment, reminds us of the Buddha's spiritual attainment, reminds us that we too can attain, that we too can progress, that we too can evolve, that we too even in the end can realize. And this great festival, the festival of the Buddha, the festival of the Buddha's enlightenment, is celebrated on the full moon day of the Indian month Vaishakha, or Vesakha, or Vesak in Sinhalese, corresponding to our month, or months, April to May. Secondly, in the Buddhist year, we celebrate the festival of the Dharma, the festival of the truth, or the festival of the teaching. And this serves to remind us of the second ideal, the ideal of the path to enlightenment, the path of the higher evolution. And this is celebrated on the full moon day of the Indian month Ashadha, which corresponds to our June to July. And then thirdly and lastly, dedicated to the third ideal, there's the festival of the Sangha, or the order. And this reminds us of the ideal of spiritual community, or spiritual fellowship, the treading of the path together towards a common spiritual goal. And this is celebrated on the full moon day of the month Kartika, corresponding to our October to November. Now, this year we've been keeping up with our Buddhist festivals rather well, and we've already celebrated the first two of these great dates. And today, tonight especially, we're celebrating the third. And as part of our celebration, we're considering the question of the individual, the group, and the spiritual community. Now we notice that the first two of the three great festivals which I've described are associated with definite events in the life of Shakyamuni the Buddha, the human historical Buddha who lived 2,500 years ago. Buddha Day, Vaishakha, or Buddha Jayanti as it's also called, is associated with the Buddha's attainment of enlightenment, sitting beneath the Bodhi tree, according to tradition, at Buddha Gaya, when he was 35 years of age. And Dharma Day is associated with the giving of the Buddha's first discourse, his first explicit teaching to humanity in the deer park at Saranath near Benares. But we find that the third great day, Sangha Day, is not so associated. It's not connected with any single one event in the life, in the career of the Buddha. So what is it celebrated, what is it associated with? Why do we celebrate Sangha Day on this particular full moon day? Now, in order to answer this question, we shall have to go back somewhat in time. We shall have to go back right to the very origins of Buddhism. Back not just to the life of the Buddha himself, but to the life of the Buddha and his disciples. And it's interesting in this connection to recall that the Buddha himself always gave great importance to his disciples, especially his enlightened disciples. There's one particular incident where someone wanted to make an offering of some rather valuable robes to the Buddha. And the Buddha said, no, don't offer them to me. Offer them to the Sangha. Better to say, offer them to a number of my disciples, perhaps enlightened disciples. He said, if you offer them to them, the merit will be greater. So you can see the position that the Buddha gave to his disciples. He certainly didn't claim all the credit, as it were, for himself. So this evening, in this connection, we're going back not just to the life of the Buddha alone, but to the life of the Buddha and his disciples, his personal disciples. We're going back in imagination, back to the jungles of India, to the villages and towns of India in those days, back to the early, the first spiritual community that gathered around, that sprang up around the Buddha. And as we go back, as perhaps we find ourselves there in the midst of those disciples and the Buddha, we discover that in those days the spiritual community around the Buddha, of which the Buddha was the center, was divided into two great sections. We can give them any names that we like. There are traditional names, Pali and Sanskrit names, but I'm not going to use those names this evening. I'm going to call these two sections the sections of the full-timers and the part-timers.